From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst.
I was born in Yuma, Arizona, in a ranch owned by my family. Like many other families, we moved to California. And at the age of 11, I started working in the fields. And that's where I witnessed for the first time the injustice and the indignities suffered by the farm workers. And I realized that to make a difference, we had to get out and start organizing the workers.
Disculpe, ¿cómo se llama usted?
Cesar Chavez.
The film Cesar Chavez was released by Pantelion Films last month. It was directed by Mexican actor Diego Luna.
The film was both celebrated and met with criticism. A lot of people said it was an oversimplification of history and it was had inaccuracies. It also was criticized because it underplayed the role of Dolores Huerta, who co-founded the United Farm Workers.
And on the other side, other Latinos encouraged people to look beyond the film's weaknesses to support a Latino filmmaker telling a Latino story, a story that's often ignored by Hollywood.
So here's what we're going to do this week on Alt Latino. We're going to first look at the film, talk about its issues. We're going to talk about why it's being criticized. Is it a good movie? Is it accurate? And we're going to be talking about that with two special guests. We have Gustavo Arellano. He's the author of the column Ask a Mexican, which appears in the Orange County Weekly.
And we also have Ann Hoyt, who is a broadcast journalist and film critic based here in Washington, D.C. She is the political correspondent for Mexico's radio network Formato 21. She is also the film critic for AARP's website in Spanish.
In addition to talking about the movie, we're then going to talk about what it was like, who was Cesar Chavez, what was the movement, and we're also going to be hearing from Felix's dad. For those of you who don't know, Felix's dad was a migrant farm worker. He's going to talk to us a little bit about what that moment in history was like. Welcome both.
Thank you. Hola. Gracias.
Guys, I think we should start with just a little bit of background on Cesar Chavez and the United Farm Workers Union. Felix, I know it's something you're very familiar with because it hits close to home for you, right?
It hits close to home for reasons that we'll talk about a little bit later in the show, but also because I lived in Central California for well over 20 years, and as a journalist, covered Cesar Chavez and the UFW and their organizing efforts. And for people who aren't familiar with the name Cesar Chavez and the UFW, let me just give you a real quick thumbnail. I mean, he's recognized as a pioneering civil rights activist because of his work to organize farm workers into a union. Now, his experience as a field laborer as a kid, as reflected in that first film clip, influenced his decision to work for social justice. And I think it's important to understand, farm workers were excluded from all rules and regulations regarding workers in this country up until the union was formed and they started organizing, getting contracts. The work of the United Farm Workers was indeed historic. You know, they asked growers to treat their workers as other industries did, with things like limits on how long they could work, supplying sanitary bathrooms, eliminating child labor, and control of how farm workers handle things like deadly pesticides.
Well, I think, Felix, now is a good time to ask you and Gustavo, you know, what the conditions were of these farm workers. I mean, why did this movement start? How bad was it?
The farm workers, of course, experienced notoriously bad living situations, as depicted, and even nicely, I would say, depicted in John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath, but exposed once and for all in Kerry McWilliams' Factories in the Field, which came out in the late 1930s, and also in the legendary documentary Harvest of Shame that was narrated by Edward R. Murrow back in the early 1960s that took specific aim at the Bracero program. And no matter how you paint it, farm working is always going to be some of the most hard labor imaginable, even if you have a union or not. I think what was important with Chavez, though, and the United Farm Workers were they were among the first people on a national scale to say, yes, we have farm workers who are working in terrible conditions, but we can make their lot in life better through a union and also through exposing the shady tactics of the farmers themselves.
And there's plenty to talk about with this film in terms of history, in terms of politics, but let's start looking at it as art, as a film, okay? And how do you think it held up as filmmaking?
I would say it is not a bad movie as it is a bland movie. I think the main character is not well developed. It doesn't tell us anything about who Cesar Chavez was as a human being, you see all the elements of this very specific period, which was very important for the farm workers' struggle in the 1960s. They are great reenactments, let's say, of pivotal moments of this struggle. But you never see how Chavez was affected as a human being by the changes. You don't get a glimpse of how he was introduced, changed, transformed, how he lived every one of these pivotal moments. I believe the film lacks focus. I believe Michael Peña, who has shown he can be a great actor, he's a great character actor. We've seen him in other films doing a great job. But here, maybe because of lack of direction or the script, he just doesn't project the energy, the fire that must have made Cesar Chavez a great leader. He is opaque, and at some points I even felt like he was playing a bit player in his own life. You know, he wasn't like the protagonist. He didn't take hold of the story, and it's very puzzling, very puzzling.
Why do you think that is?
Well, as I say, it can't be that he didn't have the chops. In fact, I think Michael Peña was a perfect actor to do this role, because he himself is born from Mexican parents who were peasants in Mexico. His parents were deported when he was 1 year old. This was in Chicago. So he has lived the experience very closely at a personal level. So this must have hit home in a very profound way for him as a human being too. But maybe it was lack of direction, I would think.
For me, watching this movie, I'm the first person in my family to be from the U.S., and so I don't have such a close connection to that movement. I felt the same exact thing as you did, and I was just wondering how, for two people that, like Felix and Gustavo, who in some way have been really affected directly by that movement, how it felt.
Yeah, I knew going in the film was going to be what it was, a first-time directorial effort by a man who wanted to raise up Cesar Chavez into the pantheon of American heroes. It was going to be a hagiography, and hagiographies are always going to get basic facts wrong. Hagiography is not going to get the history, perfect at all, nowhere close to fine.
Explain what you mean by that, Gustavo, hagiography.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to make Cesar Chavez to be a saint, a man without any faults whatsoever. What seems to be like the one error in his ways, at least according to the film, was that he didn't really pay much attention to his family. Of course, the interaction between him and one of his sons, and sort of playing the neglectful dad, trying to humanize Chavez, when we all know Chavez was far more a complex person than just being a inattentive father, which a lot of that happened later on in the 70s and 80s. So, but that's the point of films like these. You're supposed to elevate the hero. I mean, and Hollywood is chock-a-block with these types of films. If you want to stick to a Mexican point of view, the screenplay was written by John Steinbeck and directed by Eli Kazan, Zapata. You know, Zapata, Marlon Brando played Zapata, of course. How could I forget that?
Right.
Good old days of whitewashing or brown-facing. But even then, Zapata was turned into this very simplistic character. Paul Mooney played Benito Juarez in the film Juarez, again just reduced to these stock characters. Hey, at least Mooney was very swarthy, so at least he was able to play it off, right? And there's many moments in the film where you have that, in the downplaying of certain characters,
yes,
and the downplaying especially of the Filipino farm workers who actually started the grape strike. And really, really early on in the film, there's a moment between a young Cesar Chavez and his mentor, the late Fred Ross, this legendary labor organizer. The film treats Ross as almost trying to tell Chavez, you're doing the wrong thing by going and organizing the farm workers, where in reality, Ross was a monumental influence not just on Chavez, but also Dolores Huerta. And Ross was a person that Chavez forever credited with getting him on the right path toward organizing farm workers. All of that said, though, I still think this film of Cesar Chavez is essential viewing. It is a hagiography, but sometimes the public needs hagiographies in order to make them understand why someone was so important. For me, it's almost a gateway drug to then going on to other more complex works about the life of Chavez and and the United Farm Workers and also Dolores Huerta and everyone else involved.
It tried too hard, and I think that is where the problem lies. It tried too hard to be respectful. It is too reverential a look at Cesar Chavez. And I think if you're going to do a biopic like this one, what the public is expecting, you know, as an option to a documentary, who could do exactly the same kind of thing, is a glimpse into the human being. And I believe maybe because Diego Luna obviously admires Cesar Chavez and was very aware of what making this film meant for Latinos in the United States, I think in a way that kept him from getting closer.
Mm-hmm. And I want to remind our listeners that this show, what we're doing is, first of all, we're talking about the movie, its flaws, what it did right. And then what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about the movement, about Cesar Chavez. And I think now is a good time to discuss, you know, what that movement was about and who Cesar Chavez was. And Felix, this is a story that hits really close to home for you.
Yeah, it was, Jasmine. And you and I have talked about that off mic and quite a bit. And about how the farm worker movement and the farm worker lifestyle touched my life, because my dad and his family grew up as migrant farm workers. And what we did was we did an interview with my dad. He's 84 years old. He lives in Sacramento, California. And we brought him into the studios at California State University in Sacramento to talk a little bit about what it was like growing up in those days. You know, he was born into that family and he pretty much did field work till he was about 14, 15 years old. Interestingly, the studio where we brought him in to do the work, he used to work there before it was a university. It was Hop Fields, the plant that they used to make beer. And when he pulled up and he was sitting in his studio, he says, you know, I've been here before. I picked hops here when I was about 13 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
I never thought I'd be here.
Sitting in the studio, you mean?
In the studio, yeah. In the spot where the vines were. Now I'm doing this.
It's a big, wide world, man.
Boy, I'm telling you.
One of the things I remember you telling us about was just hearing your stories about what it was like. First of all, about how, you know, you didn't have a house. You rode in your, you've traveled in the car. You know, tell us a little bit about what it was like to live on the road like that as traveling. And how far did you travel?
We left Kansas in 1934. In a two-door sedan with 14 people on it. Now, you say, how can 14 people go from Kansas to California? But we did it, just barely. Anyway, that was the longest migration we did. Once we got to Montebello, which that's where we were.
In Southern California.
And from there, we used to go up to beyond Bakersfield, into the valley, and start looking for crops to harvest. And we went, sometimes we went pretty close to Merced. Only it wasn't done in one shot because we were, you know, we would go someplace and do some harvesting, and then we would go into another place and do some more harvesting. It was like that. Where we did have a steady harvest was in Merced. We picked figs there, and the ranch owner, he expected us to do that every year, which we did for a while.
So this farmer that expected you every year, did he have a place for you guys to stay when you went up to pick in his field?
Yes, he had an orchard, and we put up a tent there.
So no housing per se, just more or less.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely not.
Describe what life was like living in a tent back then, where you had a total of 8 brothers and sisters, so 9 including yourself, and then your mother and your father, right?
Right. Well, first of all, there are so many people you can fit in the tent, and some of the people will sleep in the car. At that time, it was summertime. We had a vehicle that had a mattress on it, and some people slept on the mattress outside that was on top of the truck.
Gustavo, I'm very curious to know if there are stories like that in your family background, having grown up in California.
Oh, yeah. My grandpa, mi abuelito on my dad's side, was a bracero. And then my mom's side, she grew up, my grandpa and my great-grandpa came to Anaheim in the 1920s to pick oranges. Then they went back to
Mexico. From Mexico?
Yeah. From Zacatecas to Orange County, they picked oranges in Anaheim. My aunts and uncles and my mom, they tell me those stories of being 9 years old and picking garlic and, almonds and everything. To this day, my aunts hate garlic just because it was so horrible to be able to pick. They would explain to me how their little, imagine your little nine-year-old hands getting bruised and bloody just trying to pick garlic from, again, sunrise to sunset. And then eventually they came down to Orange County in the late 1960s. And then my mom and aunts, they ended up transitioning into, instead of picking the crops, packing the crops in, packing houses.
That's a very familiar story. Like I said, I grew up in Sacramento in the Central Valley and then lived in Fresno for a long time. And like I said, there are packing houses all over the place. And that's the industry. It's a company town when it comes mm-hmm. to some of these rural communities. That's where people worked and lived and their whole lives revolved around those working conditions, good or bad.
People just accepted it as what it was. And I always ask my aunts and uncles, do you remember the great boycotts of the 70s, or Cesar Chavez? And they said, but he was never this presence because the UFW, they did a great job of organizing the Central Valley. But I think with Chavez, he was very focused on first securing the Central Valley, specifically around Delano and Fresno, before moving on elsewhere. But by that point, of course, and Chavez was very smart in calling this out, although, of course, in a controversial way, there was always a stream of immigrants that the farmers could easily use as strikebreakers because those immigrants, they were desperate for any money whatsoever. So they would take any working or living conditions that the farmers would force them.
One of the criticisms I've read of the film, which I also thought of as I was watching it, is that it kind of glosses over the issue of undocumented immigration. And I think it's a good question to get into. I mean, Felix's dad was born in the U.S. Your parents are from Zacatecas. There's a very brief mention of the issue of undocumented immigration in the film. What exactly were Chavez's views on that?
It's interesting because I just love now, in retrospect, everyone trying to claim Chavez as his own or apologizing for him. In his time, Chavez was adamantly against illegal immigration. Would use a slurs, which I don't think NPR allows us to use, but would use slurs, referring to someone's undocumented status, openly worked with La Migra in order to deport illegal immigrants. Although Chavez's case, he wasn't being racist. It was a very distinct it was a very particular distinction. The way he saw it was he was trying to organize a union. Undocumented folks, they were being used as strikebreakers. So they were being exploited to exploit other Mexicanos. So in his mind, he thought that by being adamantly pro-union, somehow he was helping out these immigrants. Of course, he got criticized then and up until this day. And Chavez, toward the end of his life, he finally came around on the issue and saw, we're kind of all in this together, whether you're legal Mexicanos or undocumented or, Mexican immigrants with papers or whatnot, we're ultimately in the same boat. But because of that, those nuances, people don't like nuances, of course. So you'll have people on the right saying, you see, Cesar Chavez was opposed to illegal immigration, so that, therefore, he's actually a true conservative, when that wasn't the case at all. Chavez was coming at it from a radical leftist unionist perspective, not the know-nothing perspective that the right comes from.
Gustavo, at the same time, when I was watching the film, I also, the first place I moved to in the U.S. was SoCal and the Central Valley area, and I would pass through a lot of those vineyards, and I worked in shops in those areas, and right now they are manned largely, I would say, by undocumented workers. So I was wondering, I know it's a whole other show, but I just did want to go into the question of how much impact did this have, really?
Chavez was ultimately both a success and a failure. He was able to make the UFW into an important cause, and he did shine a light on the abject working conditions in the field, and he grew the UFW to a pretty formidable opponent of farmers and exploiters. But ultimately, because of American, American immigration policy, but American capitalism, Chavez was ultimately going to be unsuccessful. Now, of course, the UFW as an actual union has next to no power. They're more than anything, they're symbolic, important organization. Meanwhile, there's a lot of exploitation of workers. All of this said, though, Chavez is, in my eyes, a success story because he did shine a light. He did sow those seeds of being for the Chicano movement, especially of being able to take on power and ultimately, not only face it in the eye, but beat it down. So his influence, and even in farm workers, is still felt to this day. All the way down in Florida, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, for the past decade, they've been organizing the tomato pickers in southern Florida against giants like Trader Joe's, like Taco Bell, like McDonald's, and trying to get these organizations or these conglomerates to pay just a little bit more so that the farmers or farm workers themselves can have a little bit more money in their pockets. And some of these farm workers are undocumented, but that movement, they're not going to call Cesar Chavez a sellout. They're going to say he is one of our inspirations and showing us, even yes, 40 years ago, that this could be done.
And I also think that more importantly is that Cesar Chavez was an inspiration for other activists, for mm-hmm. other civil activists. I mean, his influence wasn't just restrained to the Latino workers, farm workers. He inspired people, many people during the 60s, and this, of course, was inserted into the civil rights movement. So for many young people at the time, to see that this worked, that what he was doing, the nonviolence, his message was very inspiring, and this is what brought them as adults or once they were out of college. A lot of these young people who grew up in the 60s were also inspired to follow their own dreams or pursue their own causes because of the way Cesar Chavez did things.
I think you can't really underestimate the symbolic and the emotional part. Mm-hmm. I mean, this film really depicts like this nasty anti-Latino bent among non-Latinos, everyday people, kids, high schoolers, wives. Now, Gustavo, you're from SoCal and you have a column called Ask a Mexican in which yeah. you sometimes tackle the same very nasty opinions today. And, you know, I do have to say, depending on where you live in California, it can be a really anti-Latino, anti-Mexican place.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's written in our state constitution to hate Mexicans. Even Mexicans hate Mexicans, for that matter.
Oh, my.
What I did like about the film, and even though I only hinted at it a little bit, was how not just Mexicanos, but also folks on the left viewed Chavez as this emerging hero. And what's amazing, what's kind of sad to me is that in the 60s, Cesar Chavez was a household name across America, whether you liked him or not. But for the most part, the media treated him with a lot of respect. There was a lot of biographies that came out, you know, in the 70s about him. The New Yorker did a two-part humongous series on Chavez. And this is in the 60s when Latinos, especially Mexicanos, weren't as much a demographic presence as we are today. Flash forward now almost, 45 years later, and Latinos are now non-existent in the mainstream media. And I think one of the reasons why the Chavez film did get so much attention was because when was the last time, really? When was the, maybe Anne can answer that. When was the last time Hollywood took on a film about Chicanos, about Mexican-Americans in the United States that received mainstream attention? The last one I could remember, Selena?
Right. Yes, I imagine that would be the one, mainstream film.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was in the 90s. And that just shows, or maybe early 2000s, that just shows how pathetic Hollywood is and why there is such a thirst for these films. And when you do have these, the next to no films, any film that gets, released does go underneath a microscope. And the fact that it has to, that it's based on real life, it even gives more, it casts a harsher light of the Chavez film's flaws than I would say if it were a fictional piece of work.
I think what it brought up was the question of, well, what do you do whenever, as you say, Hollywood is ignoring the Latino themes, and then a Latino filmmaker comes along and makes a film like this with weaknesses, as we've all talked about. How do you support that? What do you do? Some people say you want to support Latino filmmakers no matter what, but then others say, well, you want to support Latino filmmakers, but the films have to be good. You know, mm-hmm. There's still that idea of, do you give him his props for trying to do this from outside the Hollywood mainstream.
Yes, and but what I think as a film critic is that your main obligation, at least that's how I see it, is to the people who are kind enough to read what you write. And what do they want to know? I mean, they really do not want to know what do I as a person feel, because I am Mexican. I mean, I was born in Mexico of an American father, so I have a very different background. But do they really want to know how do I personally feel about how this should be important, because we're living in the U.S. and everything that you have just said is very true. We need more Latino presence in the mainstream, and there is a certain moral obligation to support it. But on the other hand, and you can also include that in your review, and I think it's also important as part of reviewing a film, not only to focus on the aesthetic part, because if a film, you know, if you only treat that part, then it's worthless, because I think films should also bring something of the social, the political. I mean, they should be a mirror to our society. But you also have to be honest. You cannot say it is a great film, you're going to have fun. You can say it is very commendable, and it is. And I think I saw it again before I came to the show, and actually I had a better opinion of it because the photography is great. It is.
It really is.
It really is
great. It's really beautifully shot.
The technique, you know, the camera to the shoulder that gives it a dynamism. I mean, it has very good things about it. I, on the other hand, had to say that what a biopic should do is bring you closer to the man. That is my only thing with it. And it's something I do feel you have to be honest about with the public, no? The people that read.
Well, and let's talk about that. I love that phrase, bring you closer to the man. And what a lot of people had to say was, what about the woman? Did the film do justice to Dolores Huerta?
No, not at all. And in fact, when the film was shown in the Capitol, Felix and I were there. And by chance, you know, just by chance, I spotted Dolores Huerta among the people there, and I interviewed her. And I said, what do you think? I mean, do you think your role is very, it's there? Is it? And she said, well, no, it isn't. I mean, to tell you the truth, no, I did more. She actually was the co-founder of the United Farm Workers Union. But she said, I still believe it is important, and this is a film that people should see, and that is what's relevant. And from her standpoint, I think she should be very open about that. She should say, go and see it, okay? A film cannot embrace every single point of view. But on the other hand, just from as the point of view of a film critic, I do believe that the one character that comes off, you know, better dimensioned, has more dimensions, is Helen Chavez, the wife of Cesar Chavez with America Ferrera. That character really came to life. And you can see for the first time that Helen Chavez, that has been even more ignored than Dolores Huerta, played a pivotal part in the movement, not only taking care of the 8 children of Cesar Chavez, but she was also out there in the field getting arrested.
The film ignored everyone except Chavez. It ignored Fred Ross and how he influenced Chavez and Huerta. It ignored Philip Veracruz and Larry Itliong, the two Filipino Manongs who were basically the radicals in the field before Chavez, who were with Chavez throughout UFW. They split with Chavez. They had their own criticisms of Chavez and the United Farm Workers, but nevertheless, they were part of history. Again, this is a hagiography. This is meant to make Chavez into this saint. And he had this great, I wish I had kept the quote with me, but this great quote about saints. Angels are perfect, but saints, they're the ones who do the dirty work. They're the ones who are...
And they're stubborn.
Exactly. And so again, I think all these criticisms are not just valid, but essential. But this film, the great thing, I think, ultimately, and the legacy of this film, well, first of all, it's now going to replace Stand and Deliver as a film that all Mexican students watch at the beginning of school every single school year. That's number one. Number two is that it's going to get people to want to know more about the United Farm Workers. If you're hearing all these criticisms about a film with names you've never seen or heard of before, people, at least the smart people, and I think there's a lot of smart viewers and listeners out there, they're going to go out there and try to research a little bit more.
You can have, if you're making a piece of art, you can make poetic licenses. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, anything you do is okay to, you know, maybe, okay, Dolores Huerta didn't have the role that she did in real life. But, I mean, does it, all of the things that we have been talking about the omissions, do they add up to a better understanding of the man? That would be my objection.
Isn't the goal to make a movie that, you know, is not only watched by, you know, it's not just for us, by us.
Exactly.
It's not just like that Latinos in the U.S. will watch it, but that everyone will watch it and get, you know, a consciousness, right?
Exactly.
That's the hope. Unfortunately, I just don't see that happening. And obviously, the Chavez film didn't exactly have the strongest box office reach. It definitely didn't cross over to that mainstream audience, even though it had a very strong media push behind it, a good PR campaign. It came out in all the media outlets that I see, and I'm talking about the big mainstream media outlets. And I think that's a problem with Luna's depiction of this, is that I think the public saw that this was supposed to, and I think in the public, they thought about the Chavez film. This is a film we're supposed to like. Well, we don't want to be told what we're supposed to like. And then once they get out there in the film is a little bit ham-fisted. As a result, it's not going to be something that most people are going to watch again and again.
Felix, I think we should end the show with some more of your dad. I mean, some more of his reflections. What do you guys think?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, you know, ultimately, you know, overriding the controversies and the arguments about the film, the plus and the merits and what worked, what didn't work, I think ultimately what's important is that the story of the farm workers and farm worker lifestyle was shared, and that people had an idea, again, of if you don't come from that and have that in your background, you don't know what that's like. One of the things I talked to my dad about was I asked him what his 7-year-old self thought about his life back then.
I felt that more or less there were two worlds, the one that they were living in and the one that I was living in. And there was nothing I could do to live in that world, so I said in my mind that this is the way I lived and that's the way it went. And we just accepted the fact that we would be working in the fields till, you know, till we grew old. That's all. I didn't hold any envy or wanted to be like them. I just wanted to be myself even under those circumstances.
And if I do say so myself, my dad, he imparted that in us, that sense of self, that sense of dignity. And, you know, when some of the other things we talked about, that he thought that when he first heard about the United Farm Workers, that it was important that Chavez and the Union and Dolores Huerta and everybody else impart that dignity in that kind of work, because no one else wants to do it. Mm-hmm. And they're the only ones out there doing it to this day. So I think, thank you all for joining us on this conversation. And we talked about the merits and the pluses and minuses of the film, but also about the conditions. So thank you both for joining us.
No, gracias for having me.
We want to thank our guests today, Ann Hoyt and Gustavo Arellano. Gustavo joined us from the studios of KUCI in Irvine, California, and my dad joined us from Capital Public Radio in my hometown of Sacramento, California.
And I want to remind our listeners to join this conversation. It's an important conversation. I know our listeners have a lot to say about it. Gustavo and Anne, you'll be checking in on our Facebook and on our Twitter and our website, right?
Always.
Oh, yes.
So you can check us out on Facebook or Twitter, we're NPR's Out Latino, or just check us out on our website, on our show page, which is npr.org/altlatino.
And also thanks to Saraya Mohammed and Jessica Goldstein for their help on their show this week. And now we're going to close the show with some music from an album called Si Se Puede. It was released in 1976 as a fundraiser for the UFW. And it was recently re-released on Concord Records, and it includes a group of musicians that includes Los Lobos long before they released their first album. And we're closing with this song, No Nos Moverán, which became an anthem for the UFW, and it was usually performed at rallies and meetings or anywhere where there were more than two people with that distinct UFW flag and a determination to change things. No nos moverán. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst. This has been Alt Latino.